see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
You're listening to Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater.
Radio at its best.
And now back to Satchmo.
Colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. Much more than I ever knew, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
From the Art Center in Carrboro, this is Claudio Speakeasy in Radio Theater, a program that has fascinating guests, lively talk and conversation, community news, storytelling, and a look at our local entertainment scene. Good radio and always a few surprises. Now here's Claudio.
Thank you, Rocco, and thank you, folks, for tuning us in. This is the Speakeasy coming at you and brought to you by the Historic Carolina Theater of Durham as well as the Apex Arts Council. I've got the one and only Jacques Menache in the studio today. We're going to get into his life and all the things that he's done for this area. He helped originate the Carrboro Arts Center, WCOM, and what it is today, and hopefully the direction it's going to take. Good morning, Jacques.
Buenos dias, Claudio. Buenos dias, Rocco.
I'm just touching base with you right now because I actually want to set the mood by starting the show with something I've been promising my audiences for a long time, and that is a whole new twist on radio theater. Now, for those of you with weak stomachs, I recommend you turn me off right now because this is an edgy little performance piece. I'm not doing reader's theater. This is the written word performed. The opening piece here for Nightshades at the Blue Iguana, the opening piece is called Tropical Noir, takes place in the tropics. So give it a listen and enjoy the new angle on radio theater.
This is Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater presenting Nightshades at the Blue Iguana, Episode 1, Tropical Noir. Man, I still clearly remember that night of the monsoons, in explicit detail. The wind was blowing so hard on Main Street, it would suck your ass out of the side streets. The torrential rains literally turned streets into rivers, and the taxi I caught to find that son of a bitch got washed over and rolled off Mountain Road. The driver and I barely made it out alive. We were both strapped in, and I managed to kick out the windshield after the third rollover and pulled him out from behind the steering wheel that had him pinned. I had managed to let the top half of his seat back, and sheer brute force and adrenaline did the rest and got us the hell out of there. We were both sliced up like street punks going at it with razor blades and choking on wind and rain with every breath. The damn car flipped over on its side one more time and must have started a mudslide down the hill because, all of a sudden, the bloody thing was gone. So here we are, Headley, the cabbie, and me, sprawled out and bleeding by the side of the road, hoping nothing mortal or morbid was cut, and realizing help was not going to arrive amid this turbulence, this impossible stir of exotic passions. Those fortunate souls that have made it home were battening down their hatches, and the police and or ambulances didn't go out of their way much on a good night. It was easier to collect the bodies the next day after certain extremes than chance becoming one themselves, and what their paychecks left behind to be desired only justified their willful neglect. Just another devil's toss in paradise. Something the tourist brochures don't even hint at. Anyway, so just as we convinced ourselves of an awkward fate we had only each other to overcome, the bastard I was looking for shows up and puts three slugs into Headley. All I could see was a rain-drenched outline of the son of a bitch appearing out of nowhere and killing the cabbie, whom he must have mistaken for me, while I rolled and rolled myself over and over to create some distance, and then pulled my revolver out of my boot and emptied it into that god-forsaken blurred image until I heard it slump over like a sack of potatoes. That was one hell of a cab ride up Mountain Road, and I don't know how he knew I was coming for him, but he showed up guns blazing to take care of the problem. I do admire that. I scavenged both bloody corpses for any money or identifications that might prove useful, and rolled them further away from the side of the road. After all that, I began walking and slipping and sliding and falling down that long-ass river of a winding road, still blinded by tempest winds and sheets of rain from all sides. About 3 hours later, I hit Main Street on the waterfront. A little more than a puddle of my circumstances, seeking a rapid departure from my Caribbean meltdown. Now here I am, weeks later, at the Blue Iguana, many nautical miles away, sipping stingers on the rocks and mango daiquiris. And you're telling me they flew you in because the man I shot was actually the man who ordered the hit, and then changed his mind, and came looking for me to stop me, because the contract was on his twin brother? Did I just hear you right?
I'd like to tell you that your host Claudio is available as a poet with a one-man band for house concerts, performing original and traditional literary readings. Claudio is well known as a classical poet and master storyteller. His website is claudioarts.com. Also, look to his homepage for his YouTube channel link. Now back to Claudio.
Thank you, Rocco, and I hope you folks enjoyed that version of Radio Theater. There's going to be lots more of it, and I'm probably going to delve into many different genres, since I don't really limit myself as long as I feel I can deal with the subject matter. I want to say that today we are presenting Jacques Menache, who is a legend in the arts for Carborough, as well as, I'm sure, the Chapel Hill area. He started the Carborough Arts Center and WCOM and so much more. Today is the launching point of my new radio theater, and it is dedicated to my friend Jacques Menache and the world of the arts. So anyone listening out there.
Claudio, also, I understand you're publishing an e-book that's coming out.
I am, and it's a collection of rather dark tales I'm publishing through D.B. Becker, who is actually right now an Amazon bestseller with his book on the art of the interview. And I think it was partly inspired by him being interviewed on my show, so happy to say that. Anyway, and he's publishing a collection of my short stories called Under a Primitive Moon, and I will give more information as soon as that comes out. It's definitely a collection of darker works. I'm giving Stephen King a run for his money.
And Under a Primitive Moon is a creative web of short stories from a powerful writing talent. Is that basic?
Thank you. That's what they're putting on the book cover, so.
I see.
Hopefully I'll live up to it. I have fun writing. That's actually, out of all of my passions, the strongest in my heart is writing.
Well, Claudio, we have a legend here in the Chapel Hill area in the studio.
Jacques Menache to the microphone, please. Welcome, Jacques.
Yes, sir, I cannot tell you how happy I am to be here, and honored, of course, but radio theater has been close to my heart for a long time.
I know.
In fact, before we even started the radio station, I held meetings in bank buildings and what have you to gather people who might be interested in radio theater, and it's been a while.
This was in the early stages when you first started the stage. Give us the scoop on how this whole thing. Take us back to the Carbaro Arts Center and then WCM, if you don't mind. I'd love to hear your story.
Yeah, well, thanks. So I was fresh from Mexico City. I was born in Paris, France, and at the age of 7, I crossed the big pond.
What inspired that before you jumped the pond?
Ah, yes. My parents were had decided that Mexico was going to be the land of opportunity, and they decided to move. And I was just 7 there, and they sent my sister and I ahead of time, and we took the France, the big boat, took a week's travel.
It was called the France. Interesting.
Yeah, it's the same one on the box of cheeses, you know. So I arrived to Mexico City, and Mexico has a large French colony, and so there is a French lycée, and I went and studied there.
And we're talking about the Mexico of the 60s here.
Yes, Mexico of the 60s. That was very exciting. So I finished my high school, went to study physics and math, and didn't like it, and left home and went to San Carlos, one of the strictest academies in Mexico, like San Fernando in Madrid,
gotcha,
San Carlos in Mexico City. And my chief instructor was David Alfaro Siqueiros, one of the great muralists in Mexico. He was also the head of the Communist Party. And so I was involved in all kinds of subversive movements over there. And so when came the Olympics in 1968, 69, early 69, I was part of the student revolution there. And it was very scary because the president, thinking that he was going to quench the student upheaval, sent the helicopters to shoot on us.
Oh, Lord.
And it was at Plaza de las Tres Culturas. There's documentaries about all of this. And the bullet holes are still riddling the ground. Phew. And I was very lucky because I had a dark room and went and hid there for a little while. Anyway, I continued in the art school there. And a lady from Chapel Hill came. She was 17. I was 19 at the time. And she wanted to study art in the summertime, and we fell in love. And it so happened she was from Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Wow.
And her parents had started the Intimate Bookshop in the 30s.
Certainly a famous spot.
Yeah. And they talked to me about all these famous writers that came to this area. Langston Hughes, Upton Sinclair, Hemingway, Faulkner.
This is something I didn't know.
It was an unbelievable thing, because this Chapel Hill of the 30s and through the 50s was a cell of socialist intellectuals. And Ab Abernethy, the owner of the Intimate Bookshop, who had started that, published an underground magazine called Contempo, which has been republished many times with many poetry and articles and pieces of fiction, what have you. All these people drifted through Chapel Hill and wrote and left their little piece of art to the magazine.
I'll be darned, because Hemingway was doing journals about the war, so I'm sure he had some revolutionary statements.
That's exactly right. And so then it's 69, Chapel Hill, I'm here. I tried to enroll at UNC, and it was the middle of the summer, so there was no enrollment for me, and I went to NC Central, and I was the first full-time white student to enroll at NC Central, that was just integrating at the time.
Amazing.
And I
that's a historical little note right there.
Yeah, and I studied art, and I studied French literature written by black authors, Aimé Césaire and people from Haiti and so forth. And then I graduated from Central, and they recruited me from UNC. I went to the Masters in Fine Arts program and got a master's in 1973, at the same time with local people, John Lindsay and Bob Gaston, who you'll see their artwork all over the place. Bob Gaston has a sculpture here on top of the Art Center, and he also did the pig on top of Crook's Corner.
Ah, goodness.
So here we are. It's 1973. I graduate from UNC, and I don't have a job, and I'm looking everywhere for that, and I'm thinking, what is the need in this community if I was to stay? And there was a need for a community art center.
Fantastic.
And so I put a little ad in the newspaper, drawing and painting, and started teaching in a loft above Armadillo Grill, just a couple blocks from here.
Yeah.
And we enrolled the first 30 students, and it snowballed from there. It was first, it was a beautiful room. It had wooden floors, so we started a little dance studio, and pretty soon a mime troupe came to join, and they rehearsed there all the time, and very quickly we started theater. And this thing, because we hung paintings on the walls of this one studio, was the gallery also, and so we called it the Gallery Theater. And I borrowed chairs from the community church and lugged chairs for the best part of the first 3 years of the Art Center upstairs. And we had fantastic concerts, and we had great shows.
Now, you were part of, if I may, I'm not sure if I'm jumping the gun by saying this, but you were part of a mime troupe yourself, right?
No.
Or how did that work?
I had found this young mimes and gave them a home, essentially. And they took it from there. And also one day I had an idea that I could project movies in that same gallery theater dance studio, and I cut a hole through the office door and sat a 16mm projector and showed Marlon Brando on the waterfront, Maya Darren's on the Meshes of an Afternoon, and things like that.
Great stuff.
And people were lined up two blocks around the school to watch these things. And then I was watching out the window again from that little office, and I saw Carmel. And Carmel was deserted at the time. It was an old textile mill, Alberta mill, and it was, somebody wanted to tear it down. They thought it was ugly, and they wanted to put a new shopping center there. And I got involved into Save the Old Mill kind of movement. Pretty soon I got to meet the owners, and the owner said, okay, I want to help you. We're going to save the old mill, and I want to help you move your art center there. And so he gave me $10,000. And that was just enough money to bring the electrical service to the outside wall.
It was certainly worth a lot more then than it is now, yes.
Yeah. And because that community theater, I can't say it enough, was really the thing that propelled us to the next level. Bill Hardy and Pat Barnett and those professors of theater at UNC had no other outlet to perform and direct. And so we opened the new space in Carmel, which was completely empty. We had a wood stove to heat by, and Bill Hardy directed Clifford Odets Country Girl, and it was just a sellout. It was fantastic, great run, and it for the first time gave a sense of legitimacy to the art school, art center.
Fantastic. So we had an art center down the road before we had it here. That's fantastic.
Yes.
Let's take a moment of music and all just catch our breath, and we'll be right back on Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater.
You're listening to WCOM, the Triangle's premier innovative radio station. We broadcast something for everyone at 103.5 FM and online at WCOMFM.org. Thank you. We're glad you found us. We're WCOM Community Radio for Carrboro and Chapel Hill. Now back to Claudio.
And we're going back to Jacques Menache, who is here. He helped start the Carrboro Arts Center, and he's going to give us the background on all that, as well as WCOM. And he's pretty much a legend in this area. I'm very proud to have him on the Speakeasy. Back to you, Jacques.
Thank you, Claudio. So here we are in 1979, started the Arts Center in Carmel Mall, and it's the heydays, really. Music vibrating in Carrboro because there's clubs all around. There's the station playing reggae, and there's the Arts Center playing all kinds of rock.
So would you say it became a little bohemia here?
Yeah.
Which is always the flavor I've loved since I got here in the 70s.
Yeah. By the way, I didn't coin the Paris of the Piedmont. Neil Frank coined that, and Ellie Kinnaird made it famous by quoting it and attributing it to me, but it's really...
What specific area did they mean?
It's Niall Frank, by the way, not Neil.
Niall Frank, okay.
Yeah, and he was the king of the Invisible University at the time, and he wore half a mohawk and blue cowboy boots.
Way ahead of the day.
Yes.
My goodness. So what location was he actually referring to as the Paris?
He was referring to Carrboro.
Carrboro, okay.
He's the one who coined
that. I can see that, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that helped.
He was thinking about me, too. I saw Niall Frank just recently, a couple of weeks ago. He came for a reunion and invited all kinds of old people from the area. Anyway, so here we are. And from 79 to 1986... it was really booming. Theater was going on, films, classes, poetry. All the co-ops got started then, the writers' co-op, the poets' co-op, the actors' co-op. All of these things happened at the Art Center during that time. And the original patron of the arts, who had given me the $10,000 to put the electricity on the walls, died. The mall got sold to a dentist who all he wanted to do was to get rid of us because we were paying $1.50 a square foot, and that wasn't enough. And so I started walking around Carrboro and looking for a new space. Harris Teeters was going up, and right here where we're sitting was the Piggly Wiggly, a grocery store owned by Bird Foods chains, by Mac Bird from Burlington. And they were packing up, and I walked in and I asked, where can I find the owner? And they sent me to Burlington. I went there, talked with Mac Bird, and I said, are you interested in leasing the old Piggly Wiggly? And he says, of course. And I said, how much does it cost? He said, $1.50 a square foot. And I said, well, where do I sign? And just as I'm leaving his office, he says, are you interested in buying the shopping center? And I said, I don't know. How much does it cost? And he said, $600,000. And I said, where do I sign? And I came back to Carrboro and I told the board of directors, you know, we got to buy this shopping center because this will be the end of our search for space, and we won't have to worry about landlords anymore and all that. And the board at the time said, no, absolutely not. We're not going to get involved in real estate. And there had been a default on a loan from the YMCA. I had a great board of directors at the time and a lot of people that had insight and money. And I couldn't do anything. And I said, well, I'm going to do it anyway. And so I formed a little partnership, Main Street Partners, with the current owners of this place, this mall where we're sitting now, where they've developed a hotel and buildings everywhere. And an architect who helped us design this art center, Lucy Davis, and her then boyfriend, lawyer, Fred Emerson, and my then wife, Margaret Menache. And so the three couples Sherman and his wife Kay and Margaret and I and Lucy Davis and Fred Emerson, we sat down and made back of the envelope calculations and decided that it was very easy to acquire the shopping center for $600,000 because the leases would carry it. And so we signed a loan at the bank, and there it was. And so I set out. That was the end of my real estate experience and foray in the world. And I set out to raise $1 million to renovate this Piggly Wiggly, and opened in 1986. And it was a great success.
Opened as?
As the art center.
As the Carborough Art Center.
Yeah. The place.
A Piggly Wiggly to the art center. I did not know that. That's wild.
Yeah. And so it was very it was big at the time, but it was hard to make a living in this place, as it still is, because arts need to be subsidized, as you probably suspect. Mm-hmm. And so in 1986-87, the guy showed up. His name was Ron Cumin. And he had inherited some money, and he said, "Oh, this is a great place, Jacques. Can I help you? Can I give you some money? My wife is a dancer. Let's do something together." And I said, "Okay." So we became friends, and he helped us. And then he said, "I want to meet the board of directors." And I said, "Okay." I introduced him to the board of directors. They fell in love with him. And it turns out that he really felt that the whole shopping center didn't belong to Main Street Partners, that they should have been the art centers, and he had concocted in his mind a way to be in power and to resolve the issue of the art center and its finances by rescinding the whole contract situation between Main Street Partners and the Art Center. And so he decided to accuse me of having done something wrong, of being in conflict of interest. He accused Main Street Partners of doing illegal things. And so he showed up at a board meeting on May of 1988, and he brought a battery of lawyers and a memorandum of law, and he said, the place belongs to the Art Center, not to Main Street Partners, and we're going to take it back. But first, we're going to investigate everybody, and we'll send the SBI, and we'll do that. And I stood up.
Good Lord.
I stood up, and I resigned right there in the Irwin Theater next door, and walked out of the school and says, "If you don't trust me, after all these years of having done all of this for nothing, and I have to resign." And so I walked away, and the chairman of the board at the time was Joel Carter, and he ran behind me, and he said, "Crazy Frenchman, what's the matter with you? Why can't you just be quiet and let this play out?" And I said, "Joe, what would you do if the board lost confidence in you and this was happening?" And he said, "I would resign." And so I left, and I became an electrician and learned the trade. Made more money than I ever made in the arts, and kind of walked away because I was so hurt. I was hurt,
I can imagine,
beyond belief. It was worse than any divorce you could be involved with.
Hmm.
I was doing what I wanted. It was all the disciplines of the arts, and
it was your joy.
Yeah, I was so happy with that. And so I walked away, and it really polarized the community. My resignation polarized the community. There were those who believed I was a crook and those who knew I wasn't. And, of course, the SBI investigated, and nothing came out of it. And nobody reads the headlines of the papers after the first headline.
Right.
You know, and so that's what stuck with me.
It still remains an embarrassment just for the fact that it ever happened.
Yeah. And so I went on to my life, and later in late 90s, 2000, I started a Mexican restaurant in Carborough. It was called El Chilango, and it was a Latin American cultural center. We had dance classes.
I used to chef for Papagayos many years ago, but the one in Raleigh.
There you go.
Anyway, back to you. Didn't mean to cut you off.
No, and so that was a great experience. And however, that went south for personal reasons. My wife fell in love with a Mexican and left, and had this little 3-year-old boy, and I had an electrical business and a restaurant. Of course, everything breaks down all the time. And it's the hardest thing to
job security.
Yeah, it's the hardest thing ever. And so I quit that and lost a lot of money doing that. And then in a trip to Mexico, Ruffin Slater, the general manager of Weaver Street Market, and myself looked at a pirate radio station, and we started dreaming about coming back to Carborough and starting a community radio station. So we applied for the licenses, and it took a long time. And then he and I started the WCOM, and it was in the drive-in window of the bank at the corner of where Weaver Street is now.
I remember, that's where I started, yeah.
North Greensboro, and it later moved next to the Cat's Cradle, and now recently moved here, which was the little gallery in front of the Art Center.
Interesting, so I was here for the entire Metamorphosis, just like you guys. Except you were way before me.
So that's the beginning of WCOM, and I'm still involved here at the Art Center here and there. I think that my vision stands. The reason the Art Center is existing is because there is a need in the community.
No doubt.
And the reason the station exists is because there is a need in the community, and we need to help this.
And what were your hopes for WCOM when you originated that? I know you came with a pretty adventurous mentality for what this could be.
Yeah, I desperately wanted to start radio theater. And also, I was hoping that this little station, because I knew that 100 watts of transmission is not enough to reach anybody. Also, the internet came around. And
that's been a big help.
And 100 watts doesn't mean anything anymore.
No.
We're streaming.
As long as you can signal, it can be picked up.
Exactly. And so I always thought that there would be a pool of talent coming to this radio station, and that the quality of their show would be such that it would be syndicated, that it could be grabbed and pushed around everywhere in the country and in the world if necessary for selling, renting, showcasing, doing anything with this, because there is a huge pool of talents in this.
And the idea of syndicating, which is sort of what I had in the back of my mind when I first started for my own radio theater.
And so some people have done just that, coming right out of this radio station, and have produced shows that have been taken on by others. But we need to push more clearly this concept, so that there would be interest. I don't see why WUNC or whatever in Boston would be interested in wouldn't be interested in a show that's coming out. For instance, a little radio theater action that you're starting. I think it would be just exactly the prime candidate for that.
I'd love it. I'll put my Orson Welles cap on.
Yeah.
So, Rocco, how did you guys first meet, you and Jacques?
Well, when WCOM was getting started, Ruffin Slater was and still is the manager of Weaver Street Market. And I met Ruffin before the station. And then somewhere along the line, we got the word that WCOM was going to happen and become part of this community. So I went to Ruffin and said, Ruffin, I'm interested in maybe being a part of this station. Mm-hmm. Of course, I hadn't been on the air in 39 years.
Wow.
Because I spent 41, 42 years in the public schools.
And at one time, it was your career to be on radio.
It was. That was in the 60s. Mm-hmm. I first went on the radio in 1961. And basically, it was commercial radio in Arizona, New Jersey.
He was actually getting paid for it, right.
And I remember the first meeting we had, and I forgot my camera. It would have been a classic picture of the original people all together in that building that was the bank. And Jacques was there, Ruffin was there, and many of the people that first went on the air, Bob Burtman, Melva Oakham was there, Fred Wasser, and I met Jacques and saw him there, and we had another year go by, I believe. But after that first meeting, there was a lot of work being done. Chris Frank was on board, who was our first station manager here. And basically, in the course of other meetings, I said to Jacques and Ruffin, I said, well, look, if you put me on the air, listen to what I'm going to do. And if you don't like it or you don't think it's going to fit, just let me know. Not going to be a problem. Well, they put me on the air. And here you are. That was over, well, it was 10 years ago, really.
Smart move on that part.
And it was a Saturday morning music show, and it's still on. I think I'm up to number 565 now, or whatever it is.
Musical, the best thing since Casey Kasem.
Thank you, Rocco.
And Jacques and I have become good friends, and Ruffin started another Weaver Street Market in Hillsboro and pretty much moved the operation up there as its headquarters. But we've all been in this together for 12 years, really.
Yeah, the pioneers, yeah.
And trying to get this station going and on the air and being vital and a part of this community and broadcasting online to the world. And we're still a work in progress. And I always say I still believe that this station, even after 10 or 11 years, is just getting started. And none of us really know what it's going to become.
So don't give up yet, Jack.
15, 20 years from now. I remember when WUNC first went on the air with classical music. That was it. They were not a part of NPR, National Public Radio, and it was a whole different world than what it is now. And there's no telling what this station is going to become.
Well, I promise, for one, to get a lot more aggressive with my radio theater. That's a promise I'm making to myself and to you folks listening.
I can tell you this. If it were not for Jacques Menage and Ruffin Slater, this station would not be here.
I know that. And I've been wanting to have Jacques on for a long time. This just seemed like the right time.
And thank you so much, Jacques, for the work you've done with the Art Center. And you went through so much with that. And this radio station that is still on the air and still broadcasting.
And on that note, let's take another musical interlude.
To 103.5 FM, WCOM LP, Chapel Hill, Carlboro. Están escuchando a 103.FM WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill, Carrboro. Thanks for listening to our station.
The world of science is endlessly fascinating, and some of the world's most significant science is going on right here in the Triangle. This is Ernie Hood. Join me Wednesdays at 11 a.m. for Radio En Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science Community, right here on WCOM-LP-FM.
You're listening to Claudio Speakeasy in Radio Theater here on WCOM. Thanks for making us a part of your day. Now back to Claudio.
Indeed, just want to remind you folks that this show is being brought to you by the Historic Carolina Theater of Durham, as well as the Apex Arts Council. And I'm going right back to Jacques Menache. You were once part of, or I don't know if you started, a sort of a mime troupe. Give us a little scoop on that. And then we can talk about what you foresee for the future of WCOM.
As I had started in the loft above Armadillo Grill here, two blocks from here, I met three young people, Jeff Lambden, Sheila Kerrigan, and Laurie Wolf. And these people have did a fantastic job starting the Touch Mime Theater. They studied with some of the best mimes.
Touch Mime Theater, I remember that.
Yeah, they started with some of the best mimes, and they did their own original thing that was absolutely fantastic. And the dynamic of this group was so complex in a way, and energy that it probably couldn't have lasted more than a few years. But they were on the road.
Do you think it was ahead of its time, or what are you saying?
Yes, ahead of its time. They were on the road all the time. They came back to the art school and art center and rehearsed like crazy, went back off on the road, created new pieces, invited other guests, mimes. And Jeff is now an instructor somewhere in Lumberton. Laurie became an actress herself and does performance art, and Sheila is an educational person. She teaches and has written a book, and they're all active, but they disbanded as a troupe. I don't think.
Well, you're certainly an incredible historian about all this. Not only names, dates, people. it's exceptional. Your memory is amazing.
Well, I really, it's my life.
Mm-hmm.
What else obviously. Can I say? Yeah.
Now, being an artist yourself, what are you doing with your time now?
Well, I still make a living as an electrician.
So you do have a passion for that. I mean, I know you went to it to survive by, but
yes.
I imagine you fell in love with aspects of it.
That, and also because I ended up wiring many restaurants in this area. Never went too far away from the food chain. But
the French never do.
No, but I am an artist, and I continue painting. I have a show every year, and I do big abstract biological landscapes, 6 feet by 6 feet of paramecium, protozoans, amoebas, things like that. In fact, I'm leaving the day after tomorrow to Boise, Idaho, on a grant from a foundation to write a book about my artwork and
Fantastic.
To conduct a workshop and to have an exhibit there.
But
and
please
I,
come,
I've
please
never
come.
Been to Boise.
Come back on the Speakeasy to cue us in when you've done.
Yeah,
all that.
Yeah, good idea.
I'd like Thanks. To do that very much.
Thanks. Yeah.
Now you have a sort of a grander vision for where you'd like to see WCM of the future evolve.
Yes. My latest passion about both the Art Center, WCOM, is a school for arts and trades. I really would like very much to see a direction where we can train young people to do and learn trades that are useful. And not only welding and woodworking and all of those things, which also technical schools in the area are doing, but to tie it in with the arts. And
Absolutely.
We have this opportunity here, this little radio station. Why are we not teaching, or why is the Art Center not teaching radio broadcasting? Why are we not interviewing people? Why don't we have news writing classes? And It seems like it's a natural. We have shows out there in the main theater. Why are we not videotaping them, recording them, sending them around? This used to happen to a great extent at some point, but because there's no money in it, it's very hard to sustain.
A lot of things fall by the wayside. Yes. But there's a way of possibly generating some money from it if we ever get the wheels turning.
Where are the young people going to learn the trade that you displaying here today? How are they going to learn? And this is the opportunity.
Come and join the people that are doing it, yeah, exactly. And have a hands-on experience.
Exactly.
Yeah. Almost like an apprenticeship, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of which, I wanted to add something. You know, I was long-time friends, I can't believe it, for over 33 years, with Marcel Marceau from Strasbourg. And he himself was a revolutionary during the war. So, you know, you see this gentle soul on stage, but there's a lot more to the man, as there is likely every man you look at. But I thought it was interesting that you had a similar rebellious experience in your own life.
Yeah.
I was actually apprenticing at the time in Baden-Baden at the Brenner Spark Hotel, having no idea that just down the road in Strasbourg was a friend that was going to mean a lot to me in my life, and I met him in America instead of Germany. Never know how the paths cross.
Well, here we are. We're meeting in Carborough, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I knew there was something special about you from the start. So, artistically, I think artists have a sense of each other. I've always wanted to have you on the show, and for some reason, today felt right.
Great.
So yeah, I definitely agree with what you point out, and maybe even getting more involved with some of the productions that have that kind of thing, that have an apprenticeship aspect to offer, and doing interviews right on stage for the radio. That has been sort of brought up here and there, but nobody's ever kicked the ball.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, Claudio and Jacques, the station has so much potential with the Art Center right here, live performances on the weekend, during the week. They could be taped, they could be broadcasted. It's all here, just ready to crystallize and put it out there. But we haven't been able to just generate enough energy and enough leadership for someone or a group to take the ball and just make it happen.
I get the impression that once it happens on any level, it'll perpetuate itself, but it just hasn't hit that snowball effect.
We need some young people.
We do. And everyone,
any ideas out there?
Everyone here at the station has another life. We have a fellow sitting right here in the studio with us. Brian Perrin has a great show on about jazz, early jazz in America,
right.
The 1920s, 1930s. He has a day job, and everyone here has something else other to do than to just be here 5, 6, 7 days a week.
Those unromantic realities, yes.
And it makes it difficult to find people that can give as much as they can to the station to make it work. And we've been struggling along, but we've been on the air.
But if we can volunteer, then so can you.
So the call is always out there. We need good people. When someone hears a radio show and they're not behind the scenes, they don't realize that it takes a lot to produce a radio show, to have it done well, flawless, seamless,
absolutely,
smooth, good copy. Writing good copy is not easy. And as you said, Jacques, maybe we need a school for broadcasting here at the Art Center. And I would try to help as much as I can in helping people to write copy.
Absolutely.
How to run the board. You know how we've had other people in here,
yes,
with you trying to run this board. And
not as easy as it looks.
It is not as easy as it looks.
You're literally playing an instrument.
And I always tell the people that come in like that, it's sort of like you're looking at an artist on a high wire.
Mm-hmm.
And they get up there on that wire and walk the line and walk across, and they make it look easy. Well, you get up there on that wire, and you'll see that falling off the wire is easy. In this business, every little mistake that is made is broadcast.
It's amplified, absolutely.
And the better you are, the more glaring the mistake. And it's amazing, but to have a flawless produced radio show looks easy, sounds easy, but it really is not easy to produce.
And unless you're seasoned in it, which only comes through time and experience, it's not ever going to come natural. You've got to be with it long enough to where you live and breathe it, and then you're natural. So that whole effort to be effortless is where all the work goes.
You hit the nail on the head. You've seen many people come in here and they try to produce the shows and they're just all over the board. And then they'll stay away for two more weeks and you have to be at it.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to offer some advice to those people that come here purely to tickle their egos. Give it up because you're not going to work it that way. That's just my take on that.
Radio, good radio is hard work.
Absolutely. Well, Jacques, we're going to give you the last word. We've got about 2 minutes to finish to wrap up Claudio's Theatre, which is brought to you by the Historic Carolina Theatre of Durham, as well as the Apex Arts Council, and that's my last plug. I'll have a new radio theatre for you folks next week, and I'm going to let Jacques wrap it up.
I want to say that we're very lucky, all of us, to A, be in Carborough, B, have so many talented people around us, excuse me, and to be able to afford just a few minutes of our lives to share this. Thank you very much, Claudio.
I completely agree, and I'm very grateful that you came on the show, and let this be the first of many times.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, my brother.
Thank you, Rocco.
Thank you, Rocco. And thank you, folks, for putting up with me. Until next time, cheers.